The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
Turley Frequency here on Archangel Radio. It's Monday morning. Start of the week. How are you feeling today? I hope you're feeling better than I am. I'm only joking. No, it's Monday. Listen, we've got to change this paradigm that we've got into where we think Sunday is great, Monday is down. No, every day is great. Every day is a gift from the Lord. We've got to try and embrace it as such. And boy, what a show we have for you today, because the sky is the limit, literally. We are talking dark skies. We're talking light pollution with Dr. Michelle Wooten, who's coming to us from the Dark Skies Project. She's an astronomer, professor in Alabama. And she's also involved in that business of trying to limit or obfuscate the light pollution, which bedevils all our lives. Whether we're living in cities or living in towns, there seems to be light pollution everywhere. I'm wondering, really, is it possible ever to get back to dark skies? She will be answering that question in the next segment. That's Dr. Michelle Wooten. We have, of course, we're looking beyond the heavens to heaven itself for the Divine Mercy Chaplet at the top of the hour, when we will be taking your calls on 888-928-0881. Or if you want to text in on 251-928-2111. And we'd be only too happy to have your intentions as part of our prayers today on the Divine Mercy Chaplet. Story time today is very much a London story. It's a story of, it came about because I was tour guiding a number of Americans, as it happened to be, American tour party, around a certain historic and very interesting part of London with a very secret Catholic history. And I suddenly realized what a treasure trove this place was. That's story time coming up in the final portion of our show, if we make it that far through this wonderful Monday morning. Listen, give yourself a pat on the back. You've managed to make it to 8 a.m. Monday morning. Okay, so that's the achievement. You've almost achieved as much as anybody could be expected to on a Monday morning. But if you're still laughing or still smiling, or even if you're just even-tempered, then you have achieved something this Monday morning. Good. Okay. What else have we got lined up for you today? Well, we've got plenty coming on this show this week. I can assure you of that. There are many people working behind the scenes to ensure that there are lots of guests every single day on the Turley Frequency. And you'll probably also noticed that we have a very interesting, eclectic mix of guests. On other stations, you might get the usual Catholic guests, and we have some of those, of course. But you also get the guests that nobody else will have on, people who you don't normally get on Catholic media. And that's partly what we're trying to do on this show. We're trying to create a show which is as interesting for Catholics as it is for non-Catholics, because it's good radio. It's radio that people want to listen to, people want to tune into. Because why else are you here? You want to be informed? Yes. You want to be edified? Of course. But above all, you want to be entertained, right? I mean, that's the whole point of radio. That's why you're driving to work at this morning, tuned in to Archangel Radio, or whether you're sitting at home, sitting on your porch, sitting in your kitchen, or whether you're maybe sitting in your sick bed somewhere listening to this, thinking, right, I need to be edified. I need to be entertained. So that's the plan today. Now, talking of edification, a story I saw just this morning really put a smile on my face, but it also asked me a question, and it was in one of those sort of feel-good stories that you get on a Monday morning in newspapers. And it was around a 73-year-old man who had been invited to his first rave. Yes, rave, that's music, loud music, dancing through the night, you know, that sort of thing, often stimulated by illegal substances. Anyway, he was invited to his first rave by his grandson, and off he went. And you can go online and look at it. And he seemed to be enjoying himself. He was throwing shapes, as they do at these things, and he was trying to enter into the spirit of it. And by all accounts, he had a wonderful time, though his grandson did say he was a little bit nervous before he got there. And I'm not surprised at 73. I'd be nervous going, and I'm nowhere near 73. But once he got there, he seemed to get into it and get into the mood of it, which is interesting in a sense. And I wonder if the 73-year-old gentleman would go again. That's the real question. I mean, anybody can experience something once and say, yes, that was interesting or it was fun, but no, thank you. But it led me to think about how 73-year-olds in that generation of people much, much older than you or me probably, are still hogging the limelight. I mean, your own president, for example, I believe is about 80 years old. And those that wish to be president announced this weekend that they're running again and all the rest, and they are in their mid-70s. Now, when I was younger, people in their mid-70s and 80s, they kind of were in something called retirement. But retirement doesn't seem to be the case, whether you're president of the United States, Joe Biden, or whether you're Paul McCartney or Mick Jagger or all these other people. I mean, the band The Who in the 1960s used to sing about hoping to die before they got old. Well, they're now in their 70s and they're still touring. And I don't know if they have deleted that song from their catalog when they're on stage, because, I mean, how much older do you want to get before I hope I die before I get old? What is old these days? Is it 100, 120, 130? These people seem to go on and on and on. And that generation from the 1960s seems to go on and on and on in politics, in media, in the arts, music, film, everywhere. They go on and on. Clint Eastwood, for example, is still making films in his 90s. Yes, 90s, and he is still starring in films. And we're not talking about genetically modified or stuff that's put together with computers. We are talking about the real Clint Eastwood standing in front of a camera talking at it, and he is still on screen. So I'm just wondering, when is this generation ever going to leave the stage, or do they have to leave the stage in only one form? And we all know what that is, unfortunately. But who would have thought it? Who would have thought that at my age, that the President of the United States would have started his political career in the early 1970s? That's right, the early 1970s. Or that somebody like Paul McCartney, who when I was a kid, Paul McCartney was a little bit passé, right? Paul McCartney was part of the Beatles and they were an older generation and they were like yesterday's black and white photographs, all the rest of it. We had new stars and there was new music. But little did I know that the new music would disappear off the scale and the old music, the music of the 1960s in particular, would just keep rattling along and the stars would seem to get bigger and bigger and bigger. We were talking the other week about Elvis and the way that he has grown in popularity since his death in a way that he would never and could never have imagined just prior to that in 1977. But anyway, look, let's find out. First of all, I want to welcome on board, as usual, Mr. Mike Romano and Mr. Reed Hodges, who will be steering the ship through these choppy waters this week. Mike and Reed, how are you doing?
Hey, Kevin, we're doing great.
That's great. So, Mike, I believe you've got to go soon. So tell us, how was your weekend? Was it good?
Yeah, I had a great weekend. Did a little work around the house, getting ready for my daughter Stella's 8th birthday party coming up this weekend. And finished up on an audiobook that I was working on, Angelic Virtues and Demonic Vices. So,
Demonic Vices.
Yes, 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 yes. Lots of wow. Demonic vices out there. Father Basil Cole is the author, so look for that title to come out from Tan Books probably sometime this summer is when they'll have it ready. So.
Wow, that sounds... am I old enough to be reading that stuff, Mike?
I don't know, Kevin.
Reed, what about you? Did you get up to any demonic vices at the weekend?
Well, I went with... my band friends and went to one of their shows, so hopefully that doesn't fall into that category. But
tell us more. What was that like? First of all, where was it, Reed?
Well, it was at OWA, which is an amusement park in Foley, which is where I graduated high school. It's about a half hour from Fairhope, and it was very chilly. It was an outdoor performance, like in the amphitheater there, and it was very cold, very windy, but they always put on a great show. Even, you know, towards the end of the night, things kind of died down after the sun went down, and it was, you know, not too fun to be outside, but, you know, they give a lot of effort, and I'm proud of them for that.
Is there a lot of, you know, at the end of the gig and all the fans have gone home and the screaming has subsided, is there a lot of stuff you got to pack up and take off stages and dismantle and all that sort of thing?
Yes, there sure is. They've got all that down pat, though. They've been doing it for about 5 years now. Really, the main thing would be the drum set. You know, there's so many pieces, mm-hmm. so many drums. They weigh a lot. So, but they've got a good system for how to get everything packed up quickly now.
So there's no griping and groaning or demanding that the roadies do it.
There's no roadies. So if you gripe and groan, you're the recipient and the one giving it out.
And what was the reaction of the crowd? Did people sort of get into it and cheering and all the mm-hmm. rest of it?
They're very popular with the crowds that they play for. On that night, you know, it was a pretty thin crowd toward the end. At the beginning, it was pretty full. A lot of things going on. It was like a festival atmosphere. People walking around, maybe not necessarily, you know, hanging out to watch. There were some people doing so, but not too many.
Mm-hmm.
And then because there's so many attractions just around the amusement park and things to look at, and then
that's true.
And then towards that's the end true. Of the night when the sun went down, it was pretty empty in there.
Did you get a chance to try out some of the amusement rides then, Reed?
No, I didn't. Oh, my gosh. I'm not much of a roller coaster fan myself.
I would have thought the band would have had free tickets.
Nope, not to that one.
No.
They'll usually get free drinks when they play at places. Not this time, though.
Do they? Yes. But presumably not too many, because the owners of these establishments, they don't want them drunk on stage, or they don't want them slurring their words into the microphone, do they?
No, they're very professional, so you know, that's not too big of a worry. But I'm sure, you know, I'm sure that there's been performances that have gotten carried away before. So,
okay. Well, there you go. We've got Mike on his demonic vices, and we've got Reed in his amusement park. I mean, it's all go. It makes my life seem very, very dull in comparison, I can assure you. But it sounds like good fun, and
so,
obviously...
not only that, Kevin, we have Michelle calling in to talk to us.
What, Michelle, the executive producer?
Yep, that's exactly who.
Are you sure? I didn't know she listened to this show, Reed.
Here she is.
Oh, here she is. Oh, hi, Michelle. Michelle, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Yeah. What do you mean? What do you mean you don't think I listened to this show? I heard that. You had your telephone open.
Oh, well, it's just, Michelle, you're so busy. I mean, you're you know, you're executive producing different shows, keeping Archangel on the go. I mean, you know, why would you bother with us, you know? But I'm very glad that you do.
No,
it's an honor.
I bother with you every day. I listen every day. You know what? We've got a great week coming up. We've got, like you said, we've got Dr. Michelle Wooten today, who's going to talk to us about Alabama Skies and the Dark Sky program. That should be really interesting. Mm-hmm. Hopefully she'll become our resident astronomer. Tomorrow we've got a really good interview with a guy named Chris Aubeck, who wrote a book called Alien Artifacts, The Forgotten Story of How We Came to Believe in Visitors from the Stars. And you know that guy that we have that calls in from San Francisco?
Dave,
I think is his name,
Dave.
Right, Dave? Yeah, he should love that interview. That'll be a really good one.
And then
on Wednesday, we have Everyday Miracles of Lourdes, and it's by a woman named Marlene Watkins that's talking about all the 20 extraordinary experiences that have come out of Lourdes, which should be really good. And then Thursday, we have really interesting Catholic Central. It's a brand new Catholic sort of comedy show, sitcom, and Father David Guffey from the Family Theater Productions National Assembly will be talking to us. So it looks like a good week.
Michelle, I mean, Catholic comedy on Thursday. Are you trying to tell us this show isn't funny enough?
It has its moments. It comes up to some moments. We're still working on it, though. No, you're very funny. You're very, very funny, Kevin. All of you are very funny.
That's not what Mike and Reed say to me when we're off air. But anyway, so Catholic Central, I have heard of them, and you can check out their website and also some of their very funny videos on YouTube, actually. They're doing something a bit different, which I like. Well, this sounds like we've got it covered, Michelle. We've got night skies, we've got aliens and their ancient artifacts. We've got Lourdes water curing us all, and we've got a good laugh towards the end of the week. What's coming Friday?
Mystery. It's always a mystery guest on Friday.
It is a mystery. Remember? A mystery guest on Friday. That's the best way to be. So a surprise guest come Friday.
On Friday. That's right. That is exactly right. So, but you know what? You stick with us and you'll listen about monsters and aliens and the miracles and, you know, and Catechism of Jesus Christ. So I don't really know what else you can want in radio.
I thought that speaking to the Santa Jeff gentleman was pretty interesting.
He was really interesting. And you know what? And when I asked him his real name, he said, it's just Santa Jeff. And I really like that because, you know what? He stayed in character. So I think it would have been funny to see all the Santa swimming out there during the polar bear swim. That would have been really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, Reed, that's something you could go down and report on next year.
We'll see about
it. Roving Reed. Roving Reed, the reporter.
I don't even know if I would want to be standing on the beach while they're doing that, while they're swimming in the Gulf in January or December, I guess.
Listen, Reed, if Michelle tells you to get in the water, you get in the water.
I know.
All right.
That's how it is on this station. So, Michelle, it sounds like a great week. Does that mean we're on air all week?
As long as people keep calling in, you can stay on air. But it's been getting pretty thin lately, Kevin.
Yes. You know how to hurt me, don't you, Michelle? well, listen, you've heard it from Michelle. That's Michelle McAloon, our executive producer, who's always watching over us. And she's saying that if you don't call in on 888-928-0881, there's a chance that Reed will have to swim with sharks and Santas off the Gulf.
I'll have to do the polar bear swim.
In January, and I will be walking the long plank into another plunge of a different sort, another plunge. As for Mike, well, he's got his demonic vices, and we don't need to worry too much about him. Michelle, as always, it's really great to hear from you. Maybe you'd like to come on each Monday and just give us a little resume of what's happening each week on the Turley Frequency.
I don't know about that, but you know what? Just know that I am always listening, Kevin Turley. Understand?
You don't need to say it twice. That's Michelle McAloon. Thank you very much, Michelle. Wow, Reed, you didn't warn me about
this. All right, have a good week.
Reed, you didn't tell me. You didn't tell me she was going to phone in. Well, there you go, folks. There it is. Listen, Reed, you can cut that out. I'm worried enough. I'm shocked enough that Michelle's calling in telling me how the show's running. So, listen, folks, do think about calling in, if only for my benefit, 888-928-0881, or text me on 251-928-2111. Now, coming up in the next segment, as you heard, we have an astronomer who's going to be talking about dark skies. If you have any questions about skies, planets, orbiting planets, I'm not sure she does ETs and UFOs, that's tomorrow. But anything to do with skies and the beauties of the night skies, et cetera, then why don't you give her a ring, especially if you're listening maybe with a school group or you're on your way to school, or you're just an amateur astronomer who loves all things night sky, then by all means think about phoning in and giving a question. Or alternatively, text me on 251-928-2111 and I will very happily put those questions to our guest. So that's it for the moment. We will be back after these words. Stay with Archangel Radio and the Turley Frequency. I blame you.
stars across the sky.
Hello and welcome back to Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio, and we are talking skies. I'm just going to read out to you a quote and then I'm going to ask you who it's by. You may be surprised. I was when I came across it earlier today. It goes like this. Today we can illuminate our cities so brightly that the stars of the sky are no longer visible. Is this not an image of the problems caused by our own version of enlightenment? With regard to material things, our knowledge and our technical accomplishments are legion. But what reaches beyond the things of God and the question of good, we can no longer identify. Faith, then, which reveals God's light to us, is the true enlightenment, enabling God's light to break into our world, opening our eyes to the true light. Well, they were the words of the then Pope Benedict XVI at a homily he gave at St. Peter's Basilica on Holy Saturday, April 7th, 2012. And it was rather surprising that he was talking about the phenomena of light pollution, essentially, and likening it to the pollution of our eyes in terms of the light of faith. It was an interesting analogy. Now, I was surprised just how much light pollution there is when I started looking into this. Did you know, for example, that light pollution has increased by at least 49% over the last 25 years? That's a heck of a jump, almost 50%. And what does this artificial light do to us, or this increased light pollution, we should say? Well, it causes havoc with our natural bodily rhythms. Nocturnal light interrupts sleep, of course, and confuses the rhythms of our body, the internal 24-hour clock that guides day and night activities and affects physiological processes in nearly all living organisms. And one of these processes is the production of the hormone melatonin, which is released when it is dark and is inhibited when there is light present. So an increased amount of light at night lowers melatonin production, which results in sleep deprivation, but also fatigue, headache, stress, anxiety, and other related health problems. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, there's even more bad news, because recent studies also show a connection between reduced melatonin levels and cancer. In fact, new scientific discoveries about the health effects of artificial light have convinced the American Medical Association to support efforts to control light pollution and conduct research on the potential risks of exposure to light at night. There's also the added difficulty these days of what's known as blue light. And if you're wondering what that is, have a look at that cell phone you're carrying or other computer device, as that's what brings this about. Now, so we know what the problems are, and we know that there are a lot of people living with these problems. So most of us would just say, well, what can we do about it? Well, a group of ecologists and astronomers in 1988 in Arizona founded the International Dark Sky Association. And its aim was to protect night environments from sky glow, excessive artificial light directed upwards into the sky. So we'll find out more about this by speaking to the Assistant Professor of Astronomy Education at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, Dr. Michelle Wooten, who also happens to be president of the new International Dark Skies Association Starry Skies South Chapter, where she works to spread awareness of the harm light pollution is doing to the southeastern United States. Michelle, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be talking with you. And what a lovely overview you gave of the issues surrounding light pollution.
Well, Michelle, until you were coming, I mean, I was aware that there was a problem. Living in London, it's a huge problem. I get it. But I wasn't aware I thought it was a problem of inconvenience, you know, that it wasn't dark enough at night. But when I started looking into this, I really started to think this is really very much a health issue for all of us.
That's right. It's a health issue for the reasons you mentioned. There's actually correlation studies showing that light pollution, when we experience it at night, we don't get the sleep we need and the melatonin production doesn't get produced. And so not only is there linkages to cancer, there's also linkages to obesity and diabetes. So if you are not paying attention right now to what is happening in your space at night, I do have a few recommendations. One is to make sure that you completely block light out that is coming from the outdoors inside, if you can get like blackout curtains. And also, there's some really great apps on the phone or your TV that you can get that have like red filters that will just reduce the amount of blue light you're receiving from your electronic devices. And just help your body know it's about time to go to bed. And then in your interior lighting, it would be a great idea to move towards redder lighting. I don't know if folks have ever picked up a light bulb at the store, but I encourage you to do so next time, because if you look at that light bulb and the box, it will show you the temperature rating on that corresponds to the color of the bulb. And you want to get something that's 3,000 Kelvin, 3,000 K or less. And that's what the American Medical Association recommends for our bodily experience at night.
And does that, Michelle, is that a light bulb which is slightly dimmer then as a result?
Ooh, good question. So, no, you can get all the colors of lights, blue to red, in the same amount of lumen output. If you buy a dimmable bulb, like many LEDs these days come in dimmable varieties. And yeah, so there's a recent study that shows that people can see just as well in 25% the regular output of light bulbs than they can in 100%
sure.
illumination. So dimming your lights at night will also be really helpful for you and for everyone around you, including all the little critters in the environment who love darkness at night too.
Well, that's the other thing, I guess, because, I mean, our neighbors' lights can be very annoying to us. But the whole ecological chain is upset by this fact of this constant glowing of light at night, right?
Yes. So in Alabama, we have some very specific species. Let me just caveat this by saying all the species that have been studied on planet Earth, and they are studied to be affected by light at night. So there isn't one species that has been studied that we don't see an effect of light on their bodily system. So it's really hones in the point that every species needs darkness. And the species in Alabama that are particularly affected are sea turtles. So sea turtles, they are used to using the reflection of light off of the ocean to know where to go at night. And that reflection of light would be from starlight or the moon. Those are natural sources of light. However, when humans have artificial light at night on their condos or whatever along the ocean beachfront, sea turtles get distracted and want to move towards that light instead. And that's why, among various other forms of pollution, some species of turtles, only 1 in 1,000 make it to adulthood because of these forms of pollution. There's also migratory birds that get distracted by light at night. And they, when they see cities with lights, they will start surrounding those cities. They're used to using other forms of navigation to like fly upwards through the U.S. and back down. But when they see a city full of lights, they're attracted to that. The reasons why aren't really well known. But they will start circling the buildings and eventually collide with windows and die. And I've talked to so many people around Birmingham where I live that when they're out early in the morning walking near buildings, they'll see a lot of dead birds from window collisions. And so Alabama Audubon is actually starting an effort this year to do bird count studies from collisions and try to motivate politicians from these studies to have buildings turn their lights off at night.
Those are just two species.
Yeah.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Wooten, who is the president of the newly formed International Dark Skies Association Starry Skies South Chapter here in Alabama. I mean, just when I was researching this, Michelle, I was really shocked to find the extent which light pollution is expanding. I mean, to increase almost 50% in 25 years is quite a frightening statistic. I mean, what's behind that, do you think?
Oh, great question. So firstly, I would like to share that just in the past 2 weeks, a new study has released that light pollution is actually increasing 10% per year, which is exponential. And what's behind that? So, you know, originally cities put up this kind of like reddish halogen lighting that was very like bright in the red. And red lighting doesn't get scattered throughout the atmosphere as much. It's also not as impactful on human and plant animal health. However, halogen lights are expensive. I'm talking about high-pressure sodium lights. Excuse me. I meant high-pressure sodium, not halogen. So nowadays, you know, you in your home, you probably use LEDs. They're very cheap. And so cities are moving towards LEDs. And the common purchase for LEDs is the 4,000K lighting that is in the blue part of the spectrum. Blue lighting scatters further throughout our atmosphere. And also, a lot of these fixtures don't have full shields on them. So if a light isn't shielded, the light will go out in every direction and oftentimes upward too. So all this scattering of light and light going outward rather than down at the ground where we needed it, and bought at a very cheap rate. Cities just want to keep putting more and more of it out there, and as they can, there's an assumption that more lighting at night will improve safety. And I would just like to share that that's inconclusive. There's been studies that have shown the exact opposite in terms of safety for crime and also, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Michelle, I mean, you've touched on something which, I mean, living in a large city, I'm sure Birmingham is exactly the same. I've noticed in the last 5 years, a lot of people are now putting very bright lights on their houses, which are activated by sort of people walking past. So they're not really, you know, they're not permanent lights, but they're on and off, on and off. But they're very bright. They're almost like searchlights that are going out across the street. And I'm assuming it's to do with crime or the fear of crime. But what you're saying is it makes no difference, right?
Yeah, I will say that it can be contextual. There are some studies that do show it improves safety, but there are some studies that show the exact opposite. So I do applaud those people who are using motion detectors. If they're using motion detectors, that means their lights are probably maybe even off all the time. But for your specific examples, it would be so great if those people like made sure there was a shield on that light so it didn't blind people. Actually, that makes it harder to see at night.
Tell me about it.
And then they can also... Yeah. And then they can also dim the lighting. So, you know, it just covers the appropriate region and not blasting out all the trees around the neighborhood.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's I thought maybe wrongly, and you're helping me with this, that maybe it made everybody safer if the street was constantly being illuminated, because a lot of it is also to do with video cameras, which is also the latest fashion in terms of house protection. And I get it. People want to feel secure and safe in their homes. But I also wonder about just the impact it has on the nightlife and the birds and what have you. Michelle, we're going to go to a break just in a moment now, but when we come back, I also know you're an astronomer, and I would also like to pick your brains about, first of all, where in Alabama you can go where you can actually see the sky, okay? Because we could sit here and talk about me living in London. I don't see any sky at night. All I see is the light from the street lamps. But to talk about natural places where you can see the skies, and also maybe to talk about some of the more interesting astronomical effects and influences that are about to hit us across the skies. Would you be open to that?
I would be very open to that. Thank you.
We can still talk about light pollution, of course, perhaps happily. But I mean, the question, I suppose, maybe you can think about it just before we go, just while we're having the break, Michelle. And it's a rather depressing conclusion I came to. And it's this. Is the horse bolted on this one? Do you know what I mean? Is there any way of retrieving the situation on this? Because, as I say, living in a city like London, I can't see how we can ever turn the clock back. I wish we could, but I'm not sure we can. So do you want to chew on that thought a little bit while we go to a break?
Yes, 100% you can.
Okay, well, that's the answer, Michelle, but you fill that out when we come back. I'm talking to Michelle Wooten, who's the Dark Skies Project person for Alabama, and she'll be back right after these words. Early Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio, and I'm in conversation with Dr. Michelle Wooten, who is president of the International Dark Skies Association Starry Skies South chapter. And I left Michelle with a rather gloomy question, which was, is it too late? Is it too late to switch off the lights? Michelle, what say you?
Oh, it's not too late. And I have so much hope for the future, and that's why I'm leading this Southeastern effort, Starry Sky South. It's just a matter of choosing the right lights at night. So the International Dark Sky Association has these five principles for responsible outdoor lighting that anyone can access on the web, and they can help a homeowner or a community adopt these principles that will keep lighting downward and the redder color controlled so that we're only using light as needed and we're producing a really safe environment. You can also go to the – go ahead.
Sorry, Michelle. I mean, it absolutely. And we'll give everybody the website they can go to, and there's some fascinating stuff on it. I enjoyed looking at that this morning. What about this other business, which is just as dangerous for us, I think, which is the whole business of blue light, you know? I mean, people might want to switch off all the lights and that, but the phone, the computer lights are still going on, and they seem to be just having as much of a bad effect on us in terms of our health, but possibly also in an accumulative effect of lighting up the environment.
Yeah, that's true. So this is where an organization like Starry Sky South comes into play. And we're just a collective of concerned citizens who are trying to educate our communities about how light affects our health and the environmental health. And so it's about giving like public presentations with as many organizations as possible, helping people know that they have a choice in how they use their interior lights and their exterior lights. And there's probably not going to be any regulation about how you use your phone or computer, but there will be like apps that you can use and install that are beneficial to your health. And then, yeah, just encouraging neighbors and actually cities to adopt lighting ordinances for exterior lighting to keep things pointed down. Yep.
So just recap, Michelle, in case anybody's just tuning in. You know the way radio works, people tune in, tune out. Just remind us of the five principles of good lighting that the Dark Sky Association, International Dark Sky Association, promotes. Just remind us what they are again.
Absolutely. And they should be taken in this order, too, starting from the most important. So firstly, is it useful? Number one, is it useful? All lighting should have a clear purpose. If it's just there for decoration, go ahead and shut it off and save yourself some energy.
That's right.
And secondly, is it targeted? Does it have a full shield on it? That means, is the light bulb all the way up inside of that fixture so that none of that bulb is extending below the fixture and pointing outward and up? That's called having a targeted light. The third thing is reducing the light level. So get a dimmable light. Doesn't need to be that full brightness for you to be able to see just as well. The fourth thing is controlling it, so putting on a motion sensor. Also, some cities are choosing for their streetlights to dim their light over the course of the night. So maybe during traffic hour, you know, 6, 7 p.m., their streetlights are on full brightness, but over the course of the night, they'll dim it down because not as much light is needed all night long. And then finally, the color of the light, again, choosing bulb that is at a temperature 3,000 Kelvin, 3,000 K, or less when you go to Home Depot or Lowe's, trying to reduce the amount of blue light that's put out by that bulb.
They sound like five really sensible, straightforward. They also save you money, right, Michelle? This is the other thing I can't understand, why people would have lights blazing all the time when it can save you money by switching them off when you don't need them, right?
Yeah, there's a quote by John Grunfeld that I loved. He was talking about how if an alien species came towards Earth and was looking down at Earth and saw all the lights that were pointing upward, they would say, wow, this is not an intelligent species and we should move on from this planet.
Michelle,
I
was going to say, I don't know if you've ever, I mean, I'm sure the same problem is in Birmingham, Alabama, as is in London in England, right? Which is is certainly prior to the pandemic, but if you went to the city of London, which is like Wall Street, you know, full of the financial institutions of this country, if you walked around those city streets at night, they would be empty of people and every single office, every single floor would be illuminated.
That is incredible. Yes.
Costing a small fortune both to finance, but also what you're saying to the environment, right?
That's right. And estimated globally, humans are spending $50 billion on unnecessary misdirected light pointed out up into space. So we could just be a little bit more thoughtful and shut our lights off, even at, after 10 p.m., just shut everything off. It's not needed.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Wooten, who is an astronomer at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, but she's also president of the Starry Sky South chapter of the International Dark Sky Association. Michelle, I've had a question from a listener, which is probably more interested in your astronomy or as interested in your astronomy. They're asking, what stars can be seen in the Alabama sky presently? Anything new? Unusual?
Yes, it's what a great day for an interview, because tonight there's some especially unusual phenomena that I'm sure that your listener will appreciate. So right now, this month, you can see the brightest star in the sky, Sirius, S-I-R-I-U-S. So if you're under a clear sky, just look for the brightest one, and that's Sirius. We also have the Moon and Mars in very close proximity tonight. So between 8 p.m. and midnight tonight from Alabama, you're going to see Mars extremely close to the moon, almost like they're stuck together. And that doesn't happen very often. So I hope you will enjoy that. Some people might have heard that there's a comet out. Mm-hmm. And indeed, if you're in a very dark sky location, you would be able to see this comet with your naked eye toward the north part of the sky near the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper. But most of us, 80% of us live under light polluted skies. So you will need a pair of binoculars or a telescope. And I would recommend going to the Sky Live. It's a website that will show you the, at the moment you're looking at the sky, like where is that comet? So you know where to point your binoculars.
That's fascinating. So this comet it's provoked. Is this comet C2202E3? Is that the comet you're talking about?
Yes, it has another name, Comet ZTC for short. And it's
why do you think, Michelle, it's provoked so much interest? I mean, is it a typical kind of journalistic play on these things that it's got to do with the end of the world or some event of some sort?
That's a great question. We'd all like to know. There's comets that come by like this one maybe once or twice a year, and not every single one of them gets as much hype as this one. But I, as an astronomer, I love it when people get excited about the night sky. So the more excitement, the better. And I would say this comet is, if you can image it or go observe with your local astronomy club. By the way, there's five astronomy clubs in Alabama, and two of them are right down near Fairhope, where this radio is being broadcasted. There's the Mobile Astronomical Society and the Escambia Amateur Astronomy Association. And they get together and they get all of their telescopes out, and you can go observe the comet with them. What I would just tell people is don't get so excited about seeing this as a colorful comet. It's probably going to look just very grayish but fuzzy in the sky. Those amateur astronomers, though, they're probably using great filters and photography to bring out some of the other colors from the carbon that's in the asteroid. And yeah, those are some great facts about that comet. It's this one only comes around every 47,000 years. So it'll be a long time before we could see it again.
I have another question here. I've got a couple of questions for Michelle. They're coming in thick and fast now. Has Michelle seen the movie Don't Look Up? I'm not familiar with that movie. Are you?
Yes, I am familiar with that movie. By the way, if you wanted to know how astronomers are tracking near-Earth objects, like comets, that movie does give a great portrayal of the science of finding a near-Earth object that could be an asteroid and trying to predict where it's going to be. I do share that one with my students at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. I teach 3 astronomy classes there. I also share with them, you know, Armageddon and some of the other comet movies. But I do think that one in particular is very thought-provoking about how would we respond if an asteroid or came close to Earth and could impact us. Would we maybe have more of a reaction or less of a reaction than was good? And how is the scientific community taken at that moment in time? Are they taken seriously or not? And so I think as scientists, we just need to be as honest and accurate about our findings as possible. And that's why I didn't want to give you a portrayal that all studies about light pollution show that light at night is not better for safety, because there are some studies in specific contexts where it is better for safety. So I don't want to totalize any research results.
I don't think you're doing that, Michelle, but I think we're all looking for a healthy balance, right? I mean, as much light as we need, but no more than that, which is the old thing about enough is good. But talk to me a little bit about, because obviously it's very clear where your interest in dark skies comes from. I mean, you're a professional astronomer. That's your profession, and that's what you're interested in. But I mean, looking into the skies, I mean, it's something which fascinates many of us, but a lot of us don't take the time to study the stars, but we're fascinated by them in a sense. Do you still have that sort of fascination about the night sky and the movements of the planets, or is it now just part and parcel of your daily work?
Thank you. I am absolutely fascinated by the night sky. I don't know. I just have this kind of humorous feeling that, wow, we actually get to see that from planet Earth. why are we so lucky that we get to see all that? And that it just exists in the first place. We get so caught up in our daily rigmarole, but at night, just takes you to another place when you're wondering about all that exists beyond us. I am still extraordinarily fascinated.
Does it provoke any larger questions?
Well, thank you for that question. I think many people are provoked by the question of, are we alone? That question actually doesn't matter to me as much. I really care more about taking care of our place on this planet Earth than I am about whether we're alone. But I do appreciate that other people really care about that. And I think the larger question for me is if I was given this amazing opportunity to see this beautiful sky and to be a citizen of this planet, what can I do to cherish it? I've been really impacted by some recent literature. Some of you might know the book Braiding Sweetgrass, where you just are drawn into this narrative about how the Earth gives so much to us and we can actually give back. What a great thing. We can take care of our Earth.
Absolutely. And I think what you and the newly formed chapter are doing, Michelle, is just that. It's as you say, it's concerned citizens saying, yes, you need light, but do we really need this amount of light? And I think that's, I mean, listen, living in London, I know there is a chapter, a Dark Skies chapter in London, and I really wish them all the success that there is, because this is a city which is light polluted to the end of the world. We're running out of time, Michelle, believe it or not, and I feel as if we've just started our solar journey, really, around the planets and what have you. But listen, tell people where they can find out more about the chapter, about your work, and also maybe give them a little idea where they could go in Alabama to see the stars. Just give us one good space where there's a dark spot in Alabama that you could go and you could actually enjoy the beautiful celestial gallery.
Yeah, thank you. So please visit our website, starskysouth.org. We are also on Facebook and Instagram, Starry Sky South. And if you want to go see a beautiful night sky, the best one I've seen in Alabama so far was at Perry Lake Park. It's kind of in the center of the state, so hopefully accessible to everybody. You do have to visit it in the fall, though, when the Cahaba River is low. There's a beautiful beach that you can go out in the fall when there's not as much water running through the Cahaba River, and I just saw the most spectacular view of the Milky Way there that I've seen in a long time, even from some designated dark sky places by the International Dark Sky Association. So please go enjoy the dark skies that we have left in Alabama.
And Michelle, if you went to that place, do you need to bring a telescope, or can you just see it with the naked eye?
Oh, you can see the Milky Way with your naked eye from that place very vibrantly. Oh, it's amazing. If you have a telescope, the things that telescopes are good for are observing deep sky objects like nebulae, star clusters, galaxies. Yes, you can see all of that with a pair of binoculars or a telescope.
Michelle, Dr. Michelle Wooten, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. I hope you'll come back and talk to us more about the night skies, and maybe we'll talk about the lack of light pollution in Alabama and elsewhere.
Oh, I would love to speak with you again. Thank you for having me.
That was Dr. Michelle Wooten, who is not just a professional astronomer in the university there in Alabama, in Birmingham, but also she's helping the Dark Skies Project, which is our association, which is all about reducing light pollution, something I think we can all agree with, and certainly Pope Benedict would have agreed with her. Okay, when we come back, we're going to be looking beyond the heavens to heaven itself with the Divine Mercy Chaplet. Stay with me here on Archangel Radio.